Hold it. The Golden State Warriors are the 2015 NBA champions. Their first title in 40 years.
For the first time since 1954, the Giants are world champions.
Four championships in the last 5 years. Yeah, I'd say it's today's golden days.
Just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, just like the tombs in Egypt, soon as you see it, you'll be speechless. Golden, no job when we slide through. We gon' provide you with something to ride to. Golden, golden, golden.
Bay's Golden Days, Marcus Boucher, Harney Graywall, back to bring you a March Madness podcast. That's right, it's that time of year, so bust out your brackets because we're going to go over every single region from the East to the West to the Midwest to the South. I don't know why I think I know love to the North, but we're going to get the whole entire bracket bringing you our favorites from each conference, our sleepers from each conference, and try to win you some money here on the Bay's Golden Days because we're all about that straight cash, homie. In addition to March Madness, we're going to talk about all the madness from the Warriors fans that's going on their 3-5 stretch since Kevin Durant has gone down with injuries, being the Bay's Golden Days. Of course, we're going to give you an update on the Golden State Warriors, but first, we got to start off with a little bit of bracketology, so let's go ahead and give you a few helpful tips and tricks to fill out that bracket.
It's estimated that 50 million American workers, a full 20% of the workforce, fills out an NCAA tournament bracket. And each hour of the workday spent filling out those brackets or watching the tournament cost employers $1.3 billion in revenue. On top of that, the American Gaming Association estimates that more than $9 billion is wagered on the tournament. But only about $262 million of that is done legally.
Shh. We won't tell either.
So when filling out this year's bracket, consider this. Over the last 5 years, 11 and 12 seeds have won more first-round games than 9 and 10 seeds in the opening rounds. And 15 seeds have won more games than 13 seeds. If you're looking for a good upset to pick over the last 5 years, the underdog has won exactly half of the games in the 6 versus 11 and 5 versus 12 matchups. In fact, an 11 seed has pulled off an upset 12 years in a row, and in 6 of the last 7 years, they've pulled off at least 2 upsets. While everyone knows one seeds are a perfect 128-0 in the first round, you might not know they haven't been as successful in the second round. A one seed has lost in the round of 32 in 5 of the last 7 seasons. And things get even worse for one seeds when it comes to advancing to the Final Four. Over the last 7 seasons, only 8 one seeds have made the Final Four. 8! And the only time in that stretch that more than one seed made the Final Four was in 2015 when 3 made it. But hey, 12 of the last 18 national champions have been one seed, so it's not all bad to be a one seed. Lastly, there are 3 things you don't want to be heading into the tournament: a 3 seed, a 6 seed, or from the Pac-12. A 3 seed hasn't made the Final Four since 2011. A Pac-12 team hasn't made the Final Four since 2008. And a 6 seed hasn't made the Final Four since the Fab Five did it back in 1992. Oh, and you definitely don't want to be seeded 9th or lower. No team seeded that low has ever won the tournament.
50 million people, $9 billion. Yes, you heard that right. Everybody and their mama tries to get into the March Madness tournament pick'em. You know, either if you're in the office pool, whether you're playing with friends, whether you're going for bragging rights or trying to beat the talking heads on TV, everybody wants to know the answers. Everybody wants to fill out their brackets. So here we go. The Bay's Golden Days is going to bring you our favorite picks, our favorite upsets, and who do we see winning the national championship game. Let's go ahead and start it off in that East bracket. In the number one seed, the number one seed of the whole entire tournament, guess who? Villanova. That's right, they were the national champions last year and will be looking to be the first repeat champions since the Florida Gators did it when they had Joakim Noah and that whole entire team with all those people back in 06-07. But it should be interesting if Villanova is going to have one of the easiest routes, but they will have an intriguing matchup versus Duke if they can get there. Harnett, do you think Villanova has a chance to pull off the repeat,
that Florida team that you talked about, that team was ridiculous. Billy Donovan as a head coach, Al Horford, Corey Brewer, Joakim Noah, they were just unstoppable, and I just don't see that in this Villanova team. I think that they're going to have a hard test until the Elite Eight when they will have to face Duke in my eyes, and I think that Duke overall is just the better team this year. I just think that they've been playing well, they're getting healthier, and they've been progressing, and they just need to stay out of foul trouble with Emile Jefferson. I think they're going to be able to take this deep and end up beating Villanova to advance to the Final Four. But some interesting matchups. I think that USC could end up taking out SMU because they like to shoot the ball as well. But the only thing with SMU, I think they might be the underdog in this region, in the East region, just because they have three guys that shoot the ball over 40% from the deep ball, and nobody gives them real respect. They had the tournament ban last year, and now they beat top 25 opponents. Their record's not phenomenal, but they had the potential of doing something very incredible in a sense, just because nobody really gives them the respect they deserve. Yes, they are a six seed, but still, I thought that was a little lower for a team that's been ranked in the top 25 for the majority of the year. I think they have the potential of getting it done, but I see them ending up playing Duke in the Sweet 16 to advance, but Duke will end up advancing.
Yeah, that could be a great matchup. SMU could be the sleeper of this region, led by Semi Ojeleli, if that's how you say his name correctly, but he is one of their best players, and he's actually a Duke transfer. Wasn't getting the playing time at Duke, but now he's playing at SMU, and he's putting up some of the best stats all across the entire country. So I have them taking out Baylor in the second round. That's if Baylor gets past New Mexico State. New Mexico State can shoot the ball, and Baylor has been struggling down this last road trip, but I'm there with you. I got SMU versus Duke, but I eventually have Duke taking on Villanova, unless Villanova might have some trouble in the second round. You heard it in the preview. First seeds are 128-0 in the first round, but in the last five of the last 7 years, they have lost in the second round, and I think we might be seeing that with returning champion Villanova. They might have a nice matchup against Wisconsin in the second round. Wisconsin has been in the Sweet 16 five of the last 6 years. They have a huge defensive team. They like to slow down the ball, and I think they're playing with a little bit of chip on their shoulder. I think they're a lower seed than they expected, sitting at the eight when they have a team like Minnesota, who is in the same conference and gets a five seed in another region, but we'll talk more about that later. I think Wisconsin could have one of the biggest upsets in this tournament versus Villanova in that second round.
Yeah, and I think that Villanova, out of all the number one seeds, has the toughest task and the toughest competition to face to get to the Final Four, even the Elite Eight. They're going to face Wisconsin, saying Wisconsin beats Virginia Tech. I have that as well. But then they have to face the winner that's going to come out of Virginia and Florida. I know Florida, yes, they lost their center. They've been a little depleted, but I think that Virginia is going to win that game, and Virginia can shoot the three ball. That game can go either way. I think that Villanova has a really tough test to even think of even getting into the Final Four, let alone even just fantasizing the thought of a repeat championship. I think that they have the toughest, which is surprising because they were the number one overall seed in the tournament, and that they got the hardest task to deal with.
Yeah, definitely with Duke sitting there in that number two seed, a lot of people thought with Duke going on that run at the end of the year and winning their conference championship that they would end up in one of those number one seeds, but that should be one hell of a matchup if Villanova's able to get by Wisconsin. If Duke's able to get by SMU, it sets up one hell of a matchup, and then we'll see what happens in the Final Four. But before we get there with Duke, let's go ahead and take it down to the West Coast, where we're represented by Gonzaga, the Catholics of the West Coast, the team that has consistently been in the tournament year after year after year, but cannot get in. Yes, that's right. They've been in the tournament 18 straight years, and they have zero Final Fours. They're led by one of the best point guards in the league, Nigel Williams-Gross, and they got a bunch of big guys. They got a starting seven-footer. They got seven-footers coming off the bench. They got size. They only lost one game this year, but this really should be an interesting division because they got Arizona, a team who they beat earlier in the year in that number two seed, but that was a game that Arizona was missing one of their best players. They were missing Alonzo Trier, who's averaging over 20 points a game. I think Arizona could make some damage in this Western bracket. There are a lot of good teams. Notre Dame, West Virginia, Maryland could make some noise. Florida State, one of the biggest teams in this region. Harney, what do we see? A rematch between Gonzaga and Arizona, or is someone else going to come in and break the party?
See, this might be my second favorite region just because of the potential matchups that can happen in the Sweet 16. I have Gonzaga advancing in the first game and then beating Vanderbilt in the second round, but this is where I have them losing. I have them losing to Notre Dame. I think Notre Dame is going to end up winning out and then going into the Elite Eight to face Arizona, which I think that Arizona and Florida State in the Sweet 16 could be one of the best games of the tournament. I just think that they both match up equally with each other, both with top-tier players, and I think that that game is going to be a defensive battle, but I just think that Notre Dame is going to get slightly edged in the Elite Eight to Arizona. I think that Arizona will beat Florida State, and they will take care of Notre Dame in an easier battle than it's going to be with Florida State. I think if they can get past Florida State, they will make it into the Final Four.
Yeah, Florida State, one of the biggest teams in the country. They have a lot of size. A lot of people are actually taking them as their first-round upsets. A lot of people see the Florida Gulf Coast. They see Dunk City. Oh, my God, they came in and upset last year, but it's going to be pretty hard to dunk on one of the tallest teams in the nation, so I do like Florida State in that 3C. But then we might have some other upsets as well. I like VCU over St. Mary's. St. Mary's had a great year, but obviously they lost to Gonzaga a couple times and don't play against the strongest competition in the league that they're in. Arizona will take care of North Dakota. I think they take care of VCU. They take care of SFU. And then in the championship game, I do have that rematch going down and Arizona taking out Gonzaga. It should be interesting. Maryland Xavier is going to be a good first-round matchup. It could go back and forth. I like Melo Trimble a lot. It seems like if you need a shot in the fourth quarter, get the ball to Melo. But those just could be some of the few upsets that we see. But at the end, I've got Arizona taking the Western region.
Yeah, same here. I just think that overall, I just don't believe Gonzaga's had the toughest challenge to get to where they are. That's why, to me, your opponent's schedule means the most, especially in college basketball, because you see all these ACC teams and SEC teams playing top-tier talent. They have multiple games against top 25 teams. And when their best game that they won was against Arizona without their best player. And to me, Arizona is a completely different team once Alonzo Trier's come back. Ended up winning the Pac-12 championship. They took care of UCLA in a way that I thought that game was going to be a lot closer. And they just started just taking control of the game late. And Alonzo Trier just held it down. And I just think that they're rolling right now. And it's not always about where you get ranked up, but it's also about where your momentum coming into the tournament is. It's like the Giants. You know, the Giants come into the playoffs. They end up just being on a hot streak, coming in as a wild card, and they end up winning it. It's about momentum, and this is where it's six games, single elimination. That's what people don't realize. It's one game, one loss. You have a bad shooting game, you're out. You could be the number one seed, and you're done. You could be like Georgetown 2 years ago and just get knocked out and have your minds blown. But this is why the tournament is the tournament, and this is what makes it so amazing. I just think that Arizona, if they can get past Florida State, I think they're going to get to the Final Four.
I would definitely agree with you there. I think Arizona definitely does have the momentum right now. You said beating UCLA, winning that Pac-12 tournament, and getting the revenge versus Oregon. I think the only thing that they have left now is getting the revenge versus Gonzaga on the road back to the Final Four. It should be interesting, that revenge versus Oregon in that Pac-12 championship game. It wasn't the Pac-12 championship game that I wanted to see because my cousin Chris Boucher wasn't playing. No, he's not really my cousin, but my dad likes to say he went up in Canada and had an affair with some black lady. So Chris Boucher, he is my stepbrother, half-brother, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's one of the biggest storylines in this tournament because up in the Midwest region, Oregon is slated at the number 3 spot. And man, I took Oregon as a sleeper last year before everybody knew because obviously me and Chris Boucher being brothers, cousins my whole entire life, I took them and I really thought they could make some damage this year and finally get to the Final Four. We heard the stat, no team from the Pac-12 has made the Final Four since 2008. I think Arizona definitely changes that. And I think Oregon still might have a chance. Dylan Brooks, in my eyes, is one of the top 10 players in this tournament. I think he's a first-round draft pick on lock. We're still one of the top blocking teams in the country. Of course, a lot comes from Chris Boucher, who averaged 2.5 blocks per game, but they still have a lot of size. And earlier in the season, they were even playing a lot of games where Chris was coming off the bench and he was playing as a six man. Obviously, he's a huge threat, hitting shots into three and blocking shots, looking like a young Kevin Durant, but he will not be there. And the favorite in this region is Kansas once again. Guess what? Number one seed. 7 of the last 11 years, Kansas has been a number one seed. Oh, what happened the other 4 years? Oh, they're a number two seed twice, a number three seed, and oh, did they get down to number four? Kansas has been the motto of consistency for this tournament, and they do have a pretty easy route, in my opinion, probably the easiest route with the injuries to Oregon. It should be interesting. They take on a 16 seed early, then they take on Miami, then they take on Iowa State, which I think could be their only problem since Iowa did outshoot them early in the year and beat them. Down in the bottom of the bracket, some of the upsets I see early, I like the team from Rhode Island. They are extremely athletic. Michigan versus Oklahoma, that's going to be a huge shootout game. Everything that's going on with Michigan playing, crashing and sliding off and then going straight to the Big Ten tournament, winning 4 games in 4 days, playing in practice uniforms, that seems like a perfect tournament story to give you some momentum going in. And then we got Rick Pitino's Louisville Cardinals, who no one's talking about for some reason, but that's how Rick Pitino probably wants it. He's going to try to sneak back into the Final Four. It seems like Louisville is always there. This should be an interesting region. It could fall apart here or there. There are some few matchups. Harneet, what do you see? Do you see Kansas rolling through to match up with number 2 Louisville?
See, this might be the region where I just think it's kind of straightforward in a sense. There's not many upsets or anything across the board besides Rhode Island beating Creighton. I think that's almost a for sure thing. They have Matthews, their MVP, who shoots over 43% from three. That is ridiculous. That means he's almost making every other shot that he's taking. That's Steph Curry type of numbers. And so for me, they're going to have to end up doing that because Creighton's going to have to rely on the three ball to beat them. And if you can't shoot as well, it's one game, and Rhode Island has a bigger chip on the shoulder. That's one thing about it. If you're under 10 seeds, especially small teams like this, you come from a small program with no respect. You only want one thing. You want to go in there at least win one game just to show people what you can and what is your program about. But I talk about Louisville, Rick Pitino. I know he loves this. I know he loves not being talked about, all the stuff that's happened, especially in the previous years about scandals and everything. I know he loves the media not being on him. But for me, I think this is Kansas' bracket. I think Kansas is going to get it. I think Louisville will be in the Elite Eight with them. But I think that Louisville, they just don't have enough. They've started to digress through as the season started to go on, especially after they lost to Syracuse in the Carrier Dome about almost a month ago. They just have not been the same team. They did not perform as well as they should have in the tournament. And I just think that Kansas is going to just fly by. I think Josh Jackson is amazing.
Josh Jackson and Frank Mason, the third. Got to make sure you get the third in there. One of the best backcourts in the country with Kansas. They have some amazing guard play. They really do have one of the easiest roads to the Final Four. If, like I said to begin this whole entire segment, if Chris Boucher was healthy, Oregon was my Final Four pick, because even as a whole entire team, they're shooting over 40% from the three-point line. They play defense. They're quick. They're big, athletic. But I just don't think they can get it done. Hey, I'll be the first one cheering and taking credit for it. Chris Boucher, what's up? Shout out to the boy. You got to come up on the podcast sometime. But we both have Kansas taking over the Midwest.
Nah, definitely. If Boucher was still in the lineup, it changes the entire game. It changes the entire complexity of the team just because he's a stretch four or five, and he takes out the opposing center out to the three-point line, and he can shoot the ball. And that makes it so easy for them to get points in the paint and get offensive rebounds and just get extra shots and keep the possession in their hands. And without that, they just haven't looked the same. They really haven't, because that guy was a savage. His numbers don't show everything because he does the intangibles as well. And so to me, once they lost him, they, in my eyes, automatically were just knocked out.
Yeah, it definitely is a big blow to their team. But we'll see if the Pac-12 can represent, and maybe we'll get two teams in a Final Four. If not, we're calling it here on the Bay's Golden Days. Arizona, at least, will be that team to break the Pac-12 losing streak since 2008. But hey, there might be one more team from that Pac-12 trying to get in there, and that's UCLA playing down in the South region. And man, oh man, this is by far, to me, the most stacked region in this tournament. We've got UNC, University of North Carolina, UCLA, and Kentucky. Those three teams alone have the NCAA record for most Final Four appearances. And they're all in the same conference. Man, we're going to look forward to some great matchups. I'm already skipping ahead and looking forward toward that Kentucky-UCLA matchup. Man, that's a national championship matchup to me right there. We got some of the best freshmen, Lonzo Ball, going against Malik Monk, and Kentucky and all their youngins, Harney. Break it down for me. What do you see happening down in this South region? And what are some of the big upsets?
All right, I'm going to start up at the top. Carolina's going to win. I have Seton Hall beating Arkansas. I have Minnesota losing to Middle Tennessee.
Yes, sir.
Butler winning. And then I have Butler beating Middle Tennessee. Seton Hall losing to Carolina. Carolina advancing to the Elite Eight, where I have Kansas State beating Cincinnati. UCLA beating Kent State. Dayton beating Wichita State. I don't have any respect for the Hornets or whatever they are, the Wichita State. No way. And then Kentucky advancing. And then that Kentucky-UCLA matchup in the Sweet 16 is going to be such a great game. But I'm picking Kentucky, sadly, only I just don't think that UCLA will play defense. I just don't think their defense, besides when Lonzo Ball wants to play, I just don't think it's there. And they have to rely on Alford to be able to hit the three ball. I just think that's a lot when you have to face so much athleticism. And then you have Adebayor down low just manhandling lately. He's been averaging almost a double-double. I think that guy's going to tear it up. I think they're going to have a lot of problems down low for him. And I see Kentucky going on to the Elite Eight, but then just getting taken out by the best team in the tournament, in my eyes, in North Carolina. They're just playing phenomenal. It's hard to go against them.
North Carolina, by far, is looking like the most complete team probably in this tournament with all the weapons that they got. Justin Jackson is having a huge year and probably going to be the NCAA Player of the Year. And the thing about him is he has really improved his game. He's already hit more three-pointers this year than he has in the past 2 years combined. And they're doing it all around. North Carolina is shooting the ball left and right. And then they got Joel Berry. He's shooting 41% from three. They really do got some shooters, and they're one of the best rebounding teams in this country. North Carolina is a team to look out for sure. But like we said, that UCLA, Kentucky matchup, that should be one hell of a one. I like UCLA a lot because they're one of the highest scoring offensive teams in this country. But you said it perfectly. They just don't play defense. And when you're playing Kentucky, when you're playing Malik Monk, who dropped 47 on North Carolina earlier this year, when you're playing against De'Aaron Fox, who's one of the fastest point guards in this league, he's going to have to match up with Lonzo Ball. It's going to be one hell of a matchup. But man, this South region is loaded with a bunch of games. And you mentioned it. There are a few upsets in here. Also, I like Seton Hall. And of course, I got to go with the Raiders, the Middle Tennessee Raiders. I got to take them to make a couple upsets, but I'm right there with you. I've got North Carolina winning this whole entire bracket and eventually moving on, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But why not just go into it right now? We got the Final Four, and I'm pretty sure we got the same Final Four, Arnie.
We do.
We got Arizona winning the West. We got Duke winning the East. Kansas winning the Midwest, and North Carolina winning the South. That's right. All four winners, top two seeds. We got two number ones, two number twos, and you might be saying, hey, why are you just going with the chalk? Where's the upsets? Blah, 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 blah. Well, let me tell you this. Since 1989, 27 of the last 28 champions have been either a four seed or better. So you tell me, yeah, we get this whole tournament. Anybody can get in. Anybody can win. But why has no number nine seed or lower ever won? Why has no number 16 seed ever beat a number one in the first round? 128, no. They even bring out the ESPN stat geeks like, oh, wow, it should have happened at least three times. Well, guess what? It didn't. 128-0. And that's why we're taking the top teams, well, at least the top two teams from each region to make it to the Final Four, Duke, Arizona, Kansas, UNC. Let's hop into this first game that should happen somewhere on the West Coast, we're assuming, and that's Duke versus Arizona. This should be a huge game, and we see the storylines with Duke all year long. It's Grayson Allen kicking people, Grayson Allen throwing a tantrum, but really the best player for Duke has been Luke Kennard, who's averaging 20 points a game and shooting 44% from the three-point line. Him along with our freshman Jason Tatum, they're having a huge year. So it's not all about Grayson Adam, yeah, blah 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 stats here. And that's another thing with Arizona too, they're a high scoring offense, and you see the big name is Lauren Markin, who might be a lottery pick, the big 7'3" boy who's shooting three-pointers left and right, being compared to Dirk Nowitzki. But we've mentioned before Alonzo Traer, who's averaging 20 points a game, and they even had a freshman point guard, Kobe Simmons, who was balling out when Trier was hurt earlier in the year. And this is the thing about Arizona that I like. They have six players that are averaging between 9 and 17 points. Well, since 2008, 8 of the 12 champions have had four players averaging double digits. I think Arizona has that firepower. And just to go against everybody else, because it seems like most of these games are just coming down to UNC versus Duke, the biggest rivalry of all. Yeah, I got that in one of my brackets, but my upset bracket special, I'm taking Arizona to take out Duke and make its way to national championship at home in Glendale, Arizona.
See, that would be crazy for them to play at home if they end up making it there, but I just think that this game, because there's talent all around, and I love Tatum, I love Kennard, and Grayson Allen, yeah, he's great, but the best thing about him and what he does, because he's not the best two players on his team, Kennard and Tatum are, and then you still have a Harry Giles who's just still not even feeling comfortable from his injury, and he was a top prospect coming in, five-star recruit and everything. I just think this game is going to come down to coaching, and I just think that Coach K is going to get it done, and that's where it's going to end up to when you have top-tier talent on both sides of the ball, NBA talent getting ready to come in. You got lottery picks on both ends. I think that's where just the overall coaching play and game management is going to come in. And I've seen Duke and Arizona both play similar styles. They like to get that pace up, and they like to score, and they like to get to the hoop and shoot the outside ball. I just think that Duke is going to have a little bit of an advantage. I just think that they're going to be stronger on the boards. And just I just think that Markin, he's a rookie, but he's kind of soft, and he likes to play a lot of outside. He's not always down low, and for a 7-footer guy, you want that guy to be in there clogging up the paint and getting boards. And I just think that Emil Jefferson is going to really step up for the Blue Devils in the Final Four.
Hey, I think you said it perfectly. It could come down to just playing experience on his team. Dukes does seem like they have a little bit of the older roster, and then with Coach K, that's all the experience in the world that you could need, and that seems like it happens a lot in this NCAA tournament. You got to have a coach who's been there before, who's not going to get pressured and overwhelmed and know what to do in the right spot and the right time, and Coach K is that perfect coach. You know, he's been to many national championships. He's won plenty of tournaments. He's coached Team USA multiple times, bring multiple gold medals to the country, so you know he's not going to fold under pressure, and I think that is a very good pick, Duke. We could see Duke facing off against the winner from Kansas, North Carolina. If we get that North Carolina matchup, oh man, the world is going to go crazy. The biggest rivalry in college basketball in a national championship, and that's what I have. I like Kansas a lot. Like I mentioned, they have a lot of talent with Frank Mason and Josh Jackson, but the thing is I just don't see them making the longest push. And even if they have to play North Carolina, I think North Carolina is better on the boards. They got better overall players. They're more athletic. They're the bigger, stronger team. And I'd have them winning in that Final Four matchup versus Kansas.
See, this is where I'm going to choose experience in the players, not even coaching, because you have Bill Self and Roy Williams, two great, amazing Hall of Fame coaches. So to me, that's equal on either sides of coaching. But I just think that Justin Jackson is just playing phenomenal, and they have every single aspect of the game covered right now. And the only loss was to Duke, and that game got ridiculous because they were up in the championship by almost like 12 or 13, and then they just happened to get struck by Duke, and that's just two teams that know each other. And I've tried multiple times to redo my bracket so I wouldn't have this outcome of UNC-Duke, just because I feel like everybody's taking it, but the more I look at it, it gets harder and harder to go away from it, just because I just think that these two have overall the entire season, when healthy, shown that they are the best teams in the whole entire world in college basketball. And to me, what an amazing final that would be to have a fourth game between Duke, UNC, when they split the regular season and then Duke ended up somehow winning the championship. I just think that if it goes down to it, I think Carolina might have the edge to get some revenge, especially after getting there last year and getting stunned by Villanova on the three-pointer.
That's the biggest thing to me, because we can go back and say, okay, Duke's taking two out of three this year versus North Carolina. But North Carolina, they're playing more than just get revenge for the two games that they lost against Duke. They're playing for the revenge versus last year versus Villanova, where they lost a game on the last shot of the game. They were so close.
What a great game, though.
What a great game. It was an awesome game. But you see that they have a lot of those returning players. Justin Jackson, I've mentioned how much he's improved so much since last year. He's only gotten better, and that team has gotten better as a whole. I agree with you. If it comes down to Duke, North Carolina, I'm taking North Carolina, but I'm saying watch out, Arizona, first Pac-12 teams getting back to the championship. I think Arizona really does have a chance. And they got the hometown cooking at home. I just think the pieces fall perfectly into the puzzle.
Literally, if they end up playing at home, I think they win it. I think they win it just because the majority of the fans are going to be them. But best believe if Duke, Carolina go to the finals, I think I might have to make a road trip to go see that game. I just think that would be an historic championship game to ever have, especially at the level of play both teams are playing right now and what they've done already in the season. Yeah, there's no Michael Jordans or anybody on the teams, but these are great young players that people don't even know about just because they're not, their name isn't LeBron James and not just getting posted on every single goddamn screen that you look at through every single media outlet. I'm telling you, these guys have some game, and the best thing about it, they don't like each other. I'm sorry. I absolutely love that. You know how much intensity that brings from every goddamn player on there and the coaches and the will to win that game? That's literally do or die, and you give it all over 150%, and that's what you'll see in that game. And that's where I think also nerves won't even be a factor, because you see these teams, they've already seen each other. I think that's where the intensity is going to take over, and I think that game will literally be 40 minutes of amazing basketball top to bottom the entire time. Probably 20 lead changes throughout. I don't see any team getting a larger lead than 6. I just think the game is going to be tight. I think it's going to be back and forth, and I think that that is going to be the best possible championship matchup for the fans to watch.
And if it happens in a national championship game, that's the biggest thing at all, because rivalry aside, you know how much these two teams hate each other. If you went to this game, just the atmosphere, even if you didn't get in, if you just went the week leading up, you were just hanging out in Arizona, going out and partying. I know you can go to ASU. The University of Arizona is going to be cracking, that's for sure. But man, this, the atmosphere of those two teams in a championship playing together, and that's what's great about this tournament. Because think about it, we can never have a World Series where the Yankees play the Red Sox.
Yeah.
We can never have a World Series where the Giants play the Dodgers. We can never have a Super Bowl where the Steelers play the Ravens. We can't have those huge rivalry games on the biggest stage possible, and we're seeing that could be a possibility this year if Duke and North Carolina are both able to get through their brackets and meet in the national championship
game. That's an amazing point, because that is true, because like, you know, you'd want to see those matchups as like the Ravens Steelers or like the Bengals Steelers
at the highest level.
And you want to see them playing for the chip, you know what I mean? And like, that sucks, because this is the only time you can ever have them. Both teams have a long way to go.
Yes.
6 games. I know that doesn't sound like much, but 6 games, and you're playing 2 in 2 days, and then you have to just travel, and then it's a lot to do. And it sucks, because in college basketball, yeah, like a team lower than 9 seed is never going to win it. 16 seed is never going to beat a 1 seed, because at the end of the day, they have NBA talent players on that team for a reason. And they choose to go to those schools because they're the best teams to get them to the NBA, especially get them ready for the NBA and have a chance of winning a championship. So you're looking, you're telling me that you, and I hate that, the ifs, or like the what ifs, the if, like shoulda, coulda, woulda. You know what I mean?
What if it was a fifth, we'd all be drunk.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's at 5 o'clock somewhere, right? It's pretty much like the same that statement. And for me, it's stupid for people to believe any otherwise. That's why it's amazing when you see rest in peace, Jim Valvano taking NC State and doing the historic things he did, even when Steph Curry did these things with Davidson. It's amazing to watch, but everybody knows it's truly a Cinderella type a situation, because they shouldn't be happening. Those teams have NBA talent players when you don't even have a player in your team that's going to make the NBA, and you expect to go out and beat these top teams. It's a long shot. That's why, to me, at the end of the day, you're always going to have top three seeds in the Final Four all around the board. There's no way it's ever going to happen. I don't think it's ever going to change.
Yeah, I don't think it would ever change either. It's great. We always see these Cinderella stories. We saw Florida Gulf Coast last year. We see Northwestern getting in this year for the first time in school history. We see Rhode Island getting in for the first time since 1999. These are great, these Cinderella teams, but Cinderella, the glass slipper got to fall off sometimes, because the reality is there's going to be someone bigger, there's going to be someone better, and obviously teams with a lot more NBA talent, coaching experience, playing experience, they got it all, but man, this should be one hell of a tournament.
And if I haven't already said it, I have Carolina winning the championship with a score of 85-79. For people that do the tiebreaker score, you know it's mandatory. And one thing I just want to say too, for the betting aspect, if you chose our Final Four picks and parlayed them for $5, it would make you over $300. So just think about that. Just ponder that thought. Even if you chose all the number one seeds to advance, $5 would still make you about $100 or a little bit more. So to me, those are the bets you guys might even think about making, just because I truly believe that it's going to be a Duke-UNC final, and I hate that everybody else is picking it, but I just don't see it going any other way. Like, Kansas, I don't see them losing to Louisville. I just don't think Louisville's strong enough. And Duke, I see them beating Villanova. I don't think Villanova can match up with them all around. And Notre Dame is like the only test I see for Arizona and Florida State and North Carolina. I just think the roads are just clear for them to get it done. And they're just better. And if they play the way they should be playing, I think our brackets are going to fall down perfectly, especially the Final Four.
Hey, get us down to that Final Four. $5 to win over $300. You know the Bay's Golden Day is all about that straight cash, homie. So you know you got to keep up with us on social media at Bay's Golden Days on Twitter, Instagram. We're going to be posting bets almost every single day along with this March Madness, giving you our best bets. But then moving on from March Madness to the madness of all these Warriors fans entering March, because since we talked our last time, since the All-Star break, things have switched up really quick for the Warriors fans. They had a 98% chance of being the number one seed in the Western Conference at the All-Star break. That's down to about 40-30%, and that number is dropping quick, just like Steph and Klay's field goal percentage, because since Kevin Durant has been hurt, the Warriors are 3-5, and Steph and Klay are both shooting at about mid-20% from the three-point line. Hard knee. I gotta ask you, you were at the game versus the Sixers that they barely pulled it out, got back to 3-5. They have been struggling lately since this stretch, since Kevin Durant's been down. Tell me, from the perspectives of the Warriors fans, what's going on with this squad?
It sucks, but it's something that could benefit us in the long run. I just think that once Kevin Durant gets reevaluated, then we'll really know the fate of our season. We just don't have the bench to compete at a high level of what we were. We were putting up 130 points a game. Now we're struggling to put up 100 every game. It just shows how big of a factor, especially on the defensive end, that we lost to from Kevin Durant. So people don't realize, look how many points we're giving up. We cannot stop the ball from getting down low. And that is a problem. Dario Saric ripped us up last night. I've never gained so much respect for one player after watching him from that game. The kid impressed me, and it was more just because we don't have that down low presence without Kevin Durant. He was leading us in blocks, killing on the rebounds, scoring efficiently for us, like almost some of the best percentages of his career. So for me, we just lose $35 million out on the court, and that's all around the team, especially with the salary cap that only has 100. So when you lose 35, think about that. You're losing almost 35% of your team in one player, and you expect to be able to be recouped on the other ends. It's not going to happen. The losses are bound to happen. The loss that made me the most mad, because we sat everybody, which I can see, because LaMarcus Aldridge out indefinitely, which sucks. That's like the worst thing to ever hear. Like when you see somebody get injured, okay, you know that's basketball-esque. But when you have to see like a player like him and like Chris Bosh have to deal with like heart tumors, like stuff like that, it's terrible for like the game overall, especially for great players like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to hurt the San Antonio Spurs. And I don't believe our percentage should be that low, like almost 40s. I'll give us probably still 60% just because of the LaMarcus Aldridge being out. I think Kawhi is almost jumping out to become the front runner for MVP too, for what he's doing. He's hit three game winners in like the past 2 weeks. That man is playing phenomenal. His defense on one end, going out to the other side. I think that Draymond will still win Defensive Player of the Year this year, but I think that you might. I know Westbrook is doing his stuff and he has the stats. I think this MVP conversation just got so much harder with us losing Kevin Durant and for how well Kawhi Leonard's been producing for that team. And I just believe that for the Warriors right now, we just have to take it one game at a time. One game at a time, one possession at a time. Just play smart basketball, trust each other like we've done in the previous years, and just give the bench. We need to start getting minutes, but though they're going to need minutes for big playoff minutes, and it's good right now. At the end of the day, though, our fate is going to be decided on what the reevaluation of Kevin Durant states, because if they say that he might have to miss a round and we're at that two seed and we end up having to possibly play Oklahoma City, we're going to get murdered down low. That could be, we could end up losing any series at that point just because we don't have the bench to compete. And now with them adding McDermott and Taj Gibson, they only got stronger. So right now, I think that we need the one seed, so we play a terrible eight seed right now because the eight seed is terrible. So right now, I think that's our best bet to advance, and we might be able to get away with the round without Kevin Durant. But as of right now, it's just got to wait on KD. Just got to see how he is.
Yeah, things are looking dim without the cupcake man himself, KD. He is not there, and I think you pointed out perfectly a thing that people don't notice that much. We tried pointing it out on our All-Star podcast. It's the defense that Kevin Durant is now bringing to the table for the Warriors. Probably one of their best defensive players right next to Draymond Green. I mentioned it on their last podcast that he's one of the first players in NBA history to hit 100 three-pointers and have 90 blocks before the All-Star break. So he's been huge down trying to be that rim protector. We talked about it so many times, losing Bogut, losing Festus Ezeli, losing that size, but Kevin Durant has been huge on the defense side of the ball, and I also think it comes into play how other teams are now attacking the Warriors on offense defensively, because you got to think about realistically, with Steph, Klay, and KD shooting, you can't stop them. We saw last year with how many open shots Harrison Barnes gets. If you're just going to replace Harrison Barnes with Kevin Durant, they're pretty much unstoppable. But now with Kevin Durant out, they're able to double team Klay and Steph. They're able to put more pressure on them because it's a lot easier to try to shut down two shooters than it is three, that's for sure. But this really isn't too big of a surprise to me. It is a surprise that they've gone 3-5 and have lost a couple games back-to-back. But we saw last year, they didn't lose any games back-to-back, but there was a stretch down the season where they were losing a game, barely winning, losing a game, barely winning. And I just think it's sort of that late-season fatigue. And the biggest thing to me is the Warriors have clinched the playoff spot since a month ago, right?
Yep.
If I'm not wrong, they set an NBA record for the earliest ever to clinch their playoff spot. And so what do they really have to play for? They're not playing for that 72-10 record. They're not playing for 7-3-9. They already clinched their playoff spot. I talked to a couple people. They're like, oh, the Warriors, just, they look like they don't care if they lose. So, I mean, really, they might just be saving themselves for playoffs. You saw last year, they might have gassed out themselves a little bit, trying to break that regular season record. Now, I think it might be smarter off. People are criticizing them for sitting against the Spurs. But on the back-to-back of an eight-game travel game where they threw over 11,000 miles, I really don't think the Warriors are in that much of a panic situation. I still see them getting that number one seed, and I just don't see anybody beating them in the seven-game series.
Yeah, see, that's the thing also. It's seven games when it comes down to the playoffs. It's not just one game. And yeah. I completely agree, too. It's almost like in a LeBron James sense. He doesn't care about the regular season anymore because at the end of the day, his only accolades that we'll ever care about are the finals. And after winning 73-9 last year, great job. You lose 3-1 in the finals. Exactly. What does that mean? Absolutely goddamn nothing. I resent that season because what it do? Happiness to the worst depression you could possibly ever have. And it still continues on to the day. It'll never be over. I remember watching the election and I saw some guy holding up a sign that said, don't forget the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead. That's where I realized that this is never, ever going to leave us. No matter what, we could end up winning and this year and it'll still never, ever be gone. People still always talk about it. So at the end of the day, I don't care if we lose. I just want to be playing good basketball. That's the one thing I hate, just watching bad basketball when I know that we have the phenomenal basketball. I just don't like bad losses. And at the end of the day, the most important thing right now is just seeding. Just making sure that we get a top playoff spot because our record's good enough compared to the East that if we make it to the finals, we'll still have home court throughout. So that's huge for us. But right now, I just don't know if I want to face San Antonio in seven games without Kevin Durant. Because Kevin Durant is a wild card right now. Nobody knows how bad his injury is. I have a torn MCL right now, a partial tear, and I know how bad that is. But the worst thing, he doesn't have a tear, but he has a bone bruise behind that. So that means it's taking him even longer just to even start working that leg out because that injury was terrible. But we were lucky enough because it could have been 10 times worse. He could have broke that leg in half. So I just think that we have to be optimistic. Still have about a month left so we get into like the real crunch time playoff basketball. So I just think that Kevin Durant, he's just the key. At the end of the day, we have nothing else right now. We have to just keep our playing semi-okay basketball because that's all we've been producing. Even in our losses, it's been terrible. Turning the ball over in the fourth quarter has made me so aggravated at some time. Just bad passes, just being careless, just being too complacent even without the lead. It just makes me so mad when they're not trying. But I can see where they're saying, like, at the end of the day, like what I just said, like LeBron James, like, all it matters about what you do in the playoffs. And we've already clinched it. It's just seeding. Just got to make sure we get the best potential matchup if we don't have Kevin Durant for round one.
Definitely. It's championship or bust for the Golden State Warriors, and there's no one that knows that better than LeBron James. We've seen it multiple years. He'll take nights off and just get himself ready for the playoffs and have a nice little smooth playoff rush, and then we'll see when he turns it on last year in Game 7, when he turns it on with his back against the line. But this year, LeBron James is actually playing more minutes than he has the past couple years and trying to really insert himself into that MVP conversation. He just threw down another triple-double the other night.
In 28 minutes. Ridiculous.
The guy is doing ridiculous things, but hey, that could factor in down later in the season. Without Kevin Love, LeBron is doing a lot more. We'll see if those minutes pile up, but then you see the Warriors on the other side taking some breaks, getting some losses, but
they're still tied right up there for the number one seed. So really, how big of importance are these games? I mean, it's not like we're playing a 20-game season and the Warriors lost five. It's an 80-game season. It's a long season, and I think the Warriors would be just fine.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough stretch for the last 15 games, but we are at the end of it. This is the tightrope that we have to walk, and we still have only a couple games left that are tough. We have the Spurs, and we have two Rocket games, and those are all three games in a row. We have the Rockets on the 28th. The Spurs on the 29th on a back-to-back, and then 2 days later, we play the Rockets again. So I think those are our toughest tests. Besides that, we have a pretty easy schedule to get us there. I think that if we go 12-3, and I'm giving those three losses to those three games, I think that we could still be able to get the number one seed.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a possibility, 12-3. Even if you lose a couple more games than that, I don't think it would be too big of a factor, because over these next 15 games, the Warriors actually have the 10th easiest schedule in the NBA, and the Spurs, sitting there tied for the number one seed, actually have the 6th hardest schedule in the NBA. So we'll see how things play off down the schedule. You know, the base Golden Day is going to come back at that and you get a wrap up. Everything, get you ready for a playoff push, because it's the Bay's Golden Days, baby. You know that. Thank you for tuning in, downloading, and subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, and we are back on SoundCloud. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and on Twitter at Bay's Golden Days. Check out our website, bgdsports.com. The Bay's Golden Days is going to keep on bringing you weekly podcasts breaking down everything from the MLB season starting up in a couple weeks to the NFL draft, NFL free agency. The Raiders got Cordell Patterson and a couple linemen. The Niners have added everybody's from the NFL free agency.
Best fourth ranked offseason so far with the Niners. I'm pretty happy.
Hey, all that money, all that cap space, all that move, and all those roster space needed to be filled. You know for sure we're going to come back and break down the Raiders and the Niners and where both teams are at heading into NFL draft weekend. If the Raiders will be drafting from LA, Oakland, Las Vegas, we still don't know, but we're going to figure out, and keep your eye out, because I'm putting out a whole entire Raiders 2016 recap as soon as that Las Vegas vote comes out. The Bay's Golden Days is bringing you content week after week after week. You know what it is. Bay's Golden Days, baby.
BGD Sports.
Yay!
Sold it. Sold it. Sold it.
Steady gold, pony boy.